We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. The zombie apocalypse is imminent. Could you survive? You'll have a better chance after completing Geek Nation Tours Zombie Apocalypse Training 101. Learn to fire weapons, scrounge for food, and actually run from zombies. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
All right, well, let's just get into it since there's comic talk already. This is episode 140 of We Talk Comics. This is the double take, and I am the co-host Keith, and joined by Chris.
Hey. Hi. If it's double take, shouldn't it be 280? Episode 280.
Good idea. It's episode 280 of We Talk Comics.
Well played.
And our guest this week is Gabe Yoakum. Is it Yoakum? Am I pronounced that right?
It is. It's Yoakum. Just like think Dwight Yoakum, without all the money.
And Gabe, tell what? How did you end up here on the show?
It's been a whirlwind. If I'm being totally honest, I'm the sales and marketing coordinator with Double Take Comics. It's a new brand. We're owned by Take-Two Interactive Software, which is the parent company of like Rockstar Games and 2K Games, those guys. And we're publishing comics now. Bill Jemis is our boss. And for those comic fans out there who kind of recognize the name, he ran Marvel between 99 and 2004. He launched the Ultimates line while he was there. And although he'll probably kill me for saying this, he also wrote Marvel. So, you know, you take the good with the bad, right? Oh, I give him crap about it every day. It's okay.
Do you dig through back issue bins just so you can bring in more copies to have him autograph for you?
No doubt about it. There's actually a really fun story. We just launched as a brand on September 16th with our first 10 titles, and we did a signing at Midtown Comics. And a guy actually brought a copy of Marvel number 3 to get Bill to sign. And Bill did, and he's got a great sense of humor about it. He really does. But, oh, man, I gave him hell. Oh, man. The conversations he and I have had about Marvel, to be a fly on the wall.
I love that it's number 3 that the guy brought.
Right.
Because that's the one that means the most to him.
Certainly, it's the best of the Greghorn cheesecakes.
Well, I'm surprised it wasn't you, Keith. That's the type of thing you do. Bring the embarrassing book.
That's right.
Yeah. Get a poster of Captain Power signed by the creator of Babylon 5. Bring in Dan Jurgens' most embarrassing work to him, where he calls it a piece of shit. If I remember that story correctly,
that would be Mike Mignola.
I
brought a book that he gave me a long story about how much he hated working on the book, which made the whole thing really awkward. Chris and I have both brought books to signings that the creator did not actually work on. So, that's next level.
That's some next level stuff right there.
Oh, at least Keith had the taste not to argue with him about it.
Oh, no, I'm pretty sure you did draw this. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
The question, though, was how did I end up on the podcast? And to be quite honest, Keith asked, and I said, yeah. ultimately, when you're brand new, it's like if you guys want to talk comics, first of all, like, this is a dream job for me, right? So I get to talk comics to with comic shop owners all day. It's outstanding. And I get to talk about comics on social media. But then I also get to do this stuff. I worked in radio for 7 years before I got a history degree and thus do sales for a living. you know, if somebody asked me to do a podcast to talk about just about my favorite subject in the world, why would I say no?
Well, Gabe, I think you may actually be more qualified than either Chris or I to do this show, which is a bit intimidating.
Well, you guys are from the Great White North, and my favorite band in the world is Bare Naked Ladies, so thank you. I assume you had something to do with them.
I had my fingers crossed for Great White, but Bare Naked Ladies, that'll do too.
I thought he was going to go with Rush, but also, we export excellent talent.
And Justin Bieber.
And also Justin Bieber.
Oh, is he Canadian?
He is indeed. He is.
Oh, God, take him back.
Well, you got him now. Like, as long as he's paying taxes up here, that's all we care about.
Oh, there you go.
Beyond Nickelback. You know, we ship a lot of crap out of here.
who were the Canadian X-Men? What were their names again?
Alpha Flight?
Alpha Flight. Yep. Yeah. Hey, but you brought the Vendigo, too, and I like Vendigo.
That's a traditional story for Canadians. We tell that when, you know, to children. You know, if you are trapped in the woods and you have to eat another person to stay alive, you could very well turn into a Wendigo. Sleep tight, kids. That's a Canadian evening right there.
Yeah, when we're sitting around the igloo, that's the story parents tell their children.
While eating Kraft dinner?
When night goes on for 6 months, you got to tell something. So, Gabe, before we actually talk about comics, what are you watching right now?
Oh, geez. Okay, so, yeah, before we started recording, I was letting you guys know. In preparation for our evening of talking comics, I had Netflix on, and I was like, well, I'm sick and tired of watching the same episodes of Frasier every night. So the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the new Michael Bay joint, was available, and I thought, well, I haven't given it a shot, so why don't I give it a shot? Oh, man, that was a mistake. I just ate a couple slices of pizza, and I already have heartburn. I don't know if it's the grease or the turtles.
I like that your food was themed to your movie. That's
well, of course. I mean, come on. You don't do that.
It's all whale blubber up here, so there's a limited number of films that really tie in.
I assume poutine and Kraft dinner as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you got whale blubber, poutine, Kraft dinner, a bison, of course, and and occasionally, you know, on a good day, polar bear.
But, I mean, come on.
Free Willy is basically the only movie that ties into that, and it's kind of sad. Like,
oh,
it's kind of a downer. Like, I hope he gets free because it's good eating.
that would make for a better movie than the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I think I've tried now four times because I think I go about 2 months and then I convince myself that I've never tried to watch it. And then maybe like 10 minutes in and then, you know, once the shaking stops.
Well, you know, it's hard because it's like, the nostalgia factor is very strong with me with the Turtles. I'm 32. So, I mean, it's right in the cartoons, right in my little kid wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. Right. So I loved it. But for me, it wasn't the Eastman comic originally, it was the cartoon.
Right.
And then I found the comic in my teens. But, I got through about an hour of it before I really, really started hating it just because of, like, the nostalgia factor.
The nostalgia can carry you far. I mean, I look at the number of people who see the Transformers movies because that nostalgia tips them over. I get a lot of enjoyment out of the G.I. Joe movies. I know they're terrible, but that was my jam when I was that age.
Sure.
So the nostalgia, I mean, it's Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow fighting. They're having ninja fights. Like, I can ignore a whole lot for that.
No, come on. The Transformers were always crappy. That cartoon was poorly written. At least the Turtles, they were watchable cartoons. The only Transformers that were worth watching was Beast Wars. And no one even remembers that one, so...
No, I remember Beast Wars. Beast Wars was the cartoon that I watched when I was too old to be watching cartoons.
It was an excellent cartoon, but, I mean, really, on a whole, you're going for nostalgia factor. Everyone remembers the 80s Transformers cartoon series. It was crappy. The movies are crappy. There's not a loss.
Right, well, you know...
There's a significant loss because the Turtles cartoons were watchable.
Right, oh, for sure. I cringe when I think they were actually shooting the second movie outside of our office a couple weeks ago. And, like, I'm cringing about, like, who are they going to use as a villain this time? Are we going to see, like... I mean, Bebop and Rocksteady, I can't wait to see how they ruin them and ruin that part of my childhood. And, like, are they going to do Krang? Because if they do Krang and it sucks,
But you have to go see it just for Krang.
If they take a shot at Krang, yeah. I'm in the theater opening weekend. Just
right, of course. You know?
I want the spinoff. I want to make sure the spinoff movie happens. Everybody loves Krang. Like the romantic comedy Krang movie. Who do you cast as Krang? As both parts of Krang?
Ooh.
Do you get separate actors for that? So who do you get for that?
Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, twins reunion, baby.
Yeah, they're already doing that though. Unfortunately,
are they really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick.
I believe they're calling it triplets.
It's got to be a Hemsworth. They'll put in a Hemsworth as the third person. Right? I was watching something and I'm like, why does this actor look so familiar? Like, oh, it's one of the Hemsworths. One of the lesser Hemsworths.
all the young studly men in Hollywood, their last name is Hemsworth.
Pretty much, yeah. that's the name of the cloning factory that spits them out now. Yeah, Liam 1, Chris 2. It's basically Logan's Run. When they turn 30, the Hemsworths are killed. It's just for the best.
I remember watching Logan's Run at a friend's house when I was like 8 years old, and I remember it vaguely being the first time I saw nudity on television.
It was the first time I saw nudity on television.
Yeah,
absolutely. Jenny Agutter, Gutter, I don't know how to pronounce it. Yes, she changes clothes, and it is the briefest flash of boob in any film in the 1970s. But that is the first time I saw nudity on TV. That's the first.
You see, we're bonding here. It's not just comics that we talk. It's life experiences.
That's right.
It's a beautiful thing.
Anyone else wear out a tape of Trading Places in their lifetime? Since we're sharing,
there's a legend that Fast Times at Ridgemont High was the most rewound scene in film on VHS. the pool scene.
I would
Fast
buy
Times.
That. I'm afraid to admit out loud that I actually only just saw Trading Places for the first time like a year and a half ago.
You're a youngin though. I mean, you were barely born when that movie came out, so that's fair. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of movies from the 1960s. I mean, not of a trading places level at least. I've seen the classics, but I don't know if Trading Places is considered a classic of the 80s. I think right. It's considered a film of the 80s. So I did ask you to be on the show. And the reason I did is because you say that you just have the 10 titles. So a company brand new, no one's ever heard of you, and you launched 10 titles in one day.
That's right.
That are all in a shared universe. And if you're a digital reader like I am, you gave them to me.
Indeed.
So tell us about that product launch.
That's quite the marketing scheme you got there.
Well, you know, and you're absolutely right. And when I came on board with Double Take in late March of this year, we had a couple of the books online for people to peruse and that sort of thing. We were really early in the process. And I remember going to Bill and going, so we're going to give all these away on the internet for free? And this is the plan from early on. And he's like, well, yeah, of course. It wasn't until later that we really delved into it and I figured out what the strategy really was. I mentioned briefly Bill, when he was at Marvel, he launched the Ultimates line. And when they launched Ultimate Spider-Man, they gave away millions of free comic books, free versions of Ultimate Spider-Man at movie theaters, at Walmarts, just gave the things away like crazy. He said something around the line between 2 and 4 million free comic books to get books in people's hands. And ultimately, that's the strategy we went with. Only nowadays, kids don't really have comic books in their back pocket. They have a cell phone in their front pocket. So the digital player, Keith, I know you read through the books. The digital player that we created, it's really truly the first native mobile comic book reader. So in terms of the way that we're doing panels on the streaming site, the digital books, is completely different than what the panels look like inside the actual comics. The panels online are one panel at a time. As you swipe through, either on your phone or even on the computer screen, it creates a kind of stop motion of animation effect. We keep the speech bubbles out of the frame, so everything looks like a subtitle, so you can actually see the animation and not just bubbles bouncing around the screen. So the free copies, quote-unquote, of the first issues that are online are quite different than what you get inside the physical books, but it does give people, it's almost like sampling, right? It gives people a taste of what it is that we're doing. And to be quite honest with you, as a comic book fan, I like reading digitally a little bit, but I'd much rather have a book in my hand. So it's about kind of getting out there to two different audiences and getting some crossover between the two.
And what was the print launch? Because you did something different for the print launch too.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, 10, I just got back from Baltimore, where we did the Diamond Retailer Summit, which is where we get a bunch of retailers in the room and we get to talk to them. And one of the themes of the day was, hey, we did something that no small publisher, brand new publisher, has ever done before. We launched 10 titles on one day. And to that end, you know, Bill, while he was at Marvel, another thing that he kind of started there were trade paperbacks. Before Bill was there, Marvel never did a trade paperback. They never put 6 issues together in a book. Well, we wanted to make a splash more than anything else and get people talking about us, right? Because there's so much new content right now in comics that if you're not doing something different than or exceedingly good, then you're not going to get the press that you need to succeed. And that, coupled with the fact that all 10 of these books take place in the same universe, and the fact that our price point is so low because we have a parent company that's awesome, keeps our hands off the creative, and allows us to take a risk on upfront printing. Like all the books are $250 cover price. We packaged all 10 of the books into what we're calling a super pack. So it's got a nice kind of wraparound piece on the front that gives it a spine that's shrink wrapped, so you can pick it up for $20, get all 10 books in the universe. And it's a nice, you know, kind of an easy onboarding sort of thing. You give it a shot. If you like it, great. If you don't, that's okay too. We'll have superhero books after the beginning of next year if people aren't into the zombie thing. But all of it will be in the same universe. But it's 10 in one fell swoop, and it just, it feels good. I don't know, Keith, if you've, or any of you guys, if you've held the super pack in your hands, but when I held it in my hands the first time, it was like, okay, this is a really cool presentation to me for an entire universe of books. It's almost like kind of an, and really what we were going after, if I'm being totally honest, is like almost like an Apple-y sort of experience in terms of unwrapping your books.
Right. Now, sorry, you mentioned you might be coming out with a superhero line, and it was the same universe as this Night of the Living Dead line?
Yeah. The whole universe is going to, the quote unquote double take universe. I'll break this down for you. Okay, so all 10 of these books take place in the universe that was created by the 68 film Night of the Living Dead, right? The movie fell into the public domain almost mm-hmm. immediately after it was released because of a copyright error. So that's why we were able to use it. I'll explain the history of it, though, so that because it's kind of a cool story. It predates me at the company, but our company's been in existence for almost 3 years now. Before I got here, and, you know, not that I was a catalyst for anything, but before I got to the company, when they started up, they hired Bill to come in and start a comic book company, and he had a team of about 5 people, and they were brainstorming constantly different creative ideas, seeing what worked and what didn't work. But they always had the idea of this combined universe where everything takes place in this one place. It makes the most sense. Marvel does it pretty well when they're not doing it well. So it's like they threw a bunch of ideas at the wall, and they would send out creative prompts. And the creative that they would get back when they sent these prompts out was just uninspired and bad, you know? So one day our story editor, Michael Coast, comes into the office and he's like, you know, I was researching public domain properties. Night of the Living Dead is in the public domain, like the movie from 68. Everybody watched the movie. They all got around a round table. They sent out some prompts, and it's like something just clicked. With the artists, it's like what I liken it to is like herding cats, right? It's really easy to herd cats if you can put them all in the same bathtub, right? So you send out this world where the artists know it and the writers know it and they all love it and they have experience with it, and all of a sudden the creative is honed, it's well tuned, and it's publishable. So it's like, okay, so what can we do here? Excuse me. And it's like we put together these 10 stories. 3 of the books actually follow characters from the film. The rest is just around Evans County, Pennsylvania. All this stuff takes place nowadays. In 1966, the time the movie was set. So these 10 books will be like a 6-issue arc. Some of them will be ongoing. Some of them will end up getting looped into the other stories after the 6-issue arc. But then in January, February of next year, we'll have 5 or 10 brand new series that take place in the same universe, but in the year 2015. So really the titular Night of the Living Dead is our unifying event as a universe.
Now, you mentioned the copyright on Night of the Living Dead has expired.
Yeah.
Just looking at your Kickstarter page for these books,
yeah.
And I noticed the covers have 1966 Ultimate Nightmare, Night of the Living Dead printed on them. Mm-hmm. Yet, when I'm looking at the digital books, that is nowhere to be seen. You actually have to read the story and open it up to the first page to realize this is part of the 1960s or coming out of the 1966 movie. Was that a legal issue?
No, actually. That is, it was more or less, it was just we went back and forth on it. The reason we took it off of the trade dress is because we liked the covers so much. We were so proud of the cover art that we got that we decided we didn't want to muck it up when people were looking at it with a bunch of words that may or may not be ancillary. So we went back and forth on it a couple of times, and we ended up with a more clean-looking cover on the books, and that's really where the decision came in. Wasn't a copyright issue. We also felt like the press leading to launch was enough in the vein of, oh, these books are coming out and they're all based on Night of the Living Dead, that we would be safe not having it on the cover.
And you have a parent company there. Was there any talk of starting with one of your parent companies' properties, going with a copyright that you can't patent yourself? That strikes me as a particularly risky move.
Yeah, you know, and there was some ideas that were bandied about. From what I understand, and it predates me, again, I wasn't there in time. From what I understand, what it comes down to is the reason that they started the comic book company, this side of the company, was to start creating intellectual property, right? So that's kind of what it came down to is, I believe we were working with one of the studios at one point, but it became, when you have a large company like this where really, and it's a nice problem to have, but there's, Take Two is very hands-off when it comes to the studio properties that they own. So like Rockstar works independently from 2K and we work independently from everyone as well. Nobody's telling us what to do creatively. Nobody's telling us what we can and can't do. And thus, we have to work directly with the studios if we want to do something like that. And it becomes, a bit more red tape than you want to deal with. So we're starting out doing our own creative IP. And at this point, there's no plans to do video game books. But hey, never say never. If we sell 15 million comics in the next year, then I would assume that they'll be knocking our door down.
And what
15 comic books? Did we sell that many last year? Anybody?
Yeah, no. I just pulled a number from my head, obviously. But obviously we're going to change the business and bring it back from the dead. I'm just talking at this point. What I'm saying makes no sense.
I want to see Medic rolled up into a tube in a kid's back pocket. That'll be when I know comics is back.
if that happens, dude, and you can take a picture of it for me, then I agree with you. Comics, we're back to 1957, and all is right with the world.
If I saw any comic rolled up in a kid's back pocket, I would think that the world was a lot better place than I think it is today.
Well, I mean, come on. I was at Target like 2 weeks ago, and I saw like this 55-year-old guy buying an Archie Double Digest, and it just made my day. It really did. It was just like, man. Good for you, man. Like, no shame, just buying his Archies at Target on a Sunday afternoon.
good on him. I wish Archie was what I had brought on the... I took an airplane ride recently and had a whole pile of comics loaded onto my tablet, and guaranteed every book I opened had a a sex scene in it that I did not know was in it. When I'm on a completely booked airplane.
Well, there
Hi, folks. Yeah. I'm a 40-something guy, and what I'm reading is drawn boobs.
Yeah, we all have those things, I think. Like, I'm the same way. I get, like, I'm the 30-year-old, 6'5", 310-pound guy who doesn't really mind eating a slice of pizza in the middle seat on an airplane. You know what I mean? So it's like, just deal with it, man.
So you also, where I actually read these was Comixology. All 10 up for free. Going forward, what's the sales plan, the marketing plan for how these are how the number twos are going to come out to us?
Cool. So digitally, our website is about to undergo a bit of a conversion in terms of reading the books. For the number twos, we're going to have a subscription type like Netflix site on our own personal site for the streaming of the books. So it'll end up being $2 a month for all you can read of any of the issues that we have up, starting with issue two.
Price point, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I like that price point. That's affordable.
That's only like $17 Canadian. I like it. Exchange rates.
Very, very, very nice. $2 a month. I'm unsure of the exact number. I think it's $18 for the year is what we're going to be doing for that. There'll be a 6-month option as well. I don't know what the number is yet. Comixology, because of the way that it's set up, it's a little bit different. Although the comics are the same, that sort of what we're calling like digital storyboard style. They'll be $1 a piece on Comixology after the first issues.
Okay.
And then, you know, in terms of the print issues, like I mentioned, I went to the Baltimore Retailer Summit and we talked to a bunch of retailers, and both the ones that that have heard of us and the ones who hadn't, after hearing what we were doing, loved this super pack idea. So for right now, we will continue doing both individual books and super packs of the 10 issues going forward. So, you know, $2.50 a piece and then $20 for the 10 pack for the foreseeable future.
Now, are these monthly books, or what's the schedule for number two?
Absolutely, they are. They are monthly books right now. The original, as you can imagine, when you're putting out 10 books, we want to put out the absolute best books possible. And Bill is does not compromise on the quality of the books. He, in terms of the stories that are being told. He will not put anything out that he doesn't feel is worth it. So the original street date on issue two was 10/28. We're going to hold back. There's 3 or 4 books that we're still trying to get right for the second issues. New release date on issue two is 11/11. But going forward, it's going to be monthly.
And do you have an app planned, or is your subscription just going to be web-based?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of talk in the office about this. For right now, the subscription will be web-based. We don't have an app in the works yet, but we are talking with developers in terms of getting us an app set up. The reason we went with Comixology as well, and we may be available on Madefire as well going forward, the reason we did that is because, you know, subway riders and people who can't always be connected want to be able to download the books. So that's why we went with Comixology. Actually, John Roberts, who runs Comixology, worked with Bill at Marvel. They're very close friends. They know each other very well. Definitely they'll come out on Comixology. For right now, there's no app in the works, but I would imagine by early next year we'll have something.
And So it's a universe, you said some will kind of will cycle into the others. How much of a commitment should people be looking at? Like, should they? Can you follow your favorite two or three from the first month? Are you going to get the best bang if you keep with all 10?
Well, here's the nice thing. The books will stand alone, and the arcs will be followable all the way through, you know, the 6-issue arc that we have planned first as individual books. The point of the super pack is simply that, you know, you drop the price of the book to $2 a piece. If you have a subscription somewhere, it ends up being between 15 and 17 bucks probably. So, you know, you end up at $1.50. And you get rewarded when you read all 10. I mean, there's Easter eggs across the books. There's cameo appearances of characters from one book to the other. You know, there's crossover stuff. So the experience is more rewarding. And for me, a guy who I really love my world building. You know, I love that stuff in books. Like, I love that little extra, like, piece of reality that makes you feel like you're part of something. I appreciate that aspect, but they can stand alone. If I'm, as a comic book fan, if I'm looking at this from a bubble from above, I'm telling people, pick up Z-Men first, Z-Men number one, just because it's more of a macro level view of the world. It's like from the perspective of Washington, D.C. Lyndon Johnson sends a couple of Secret Service agents out to Western Pennsylvania to figure out what's going on with this weird outbreak and these unidentified assassins that he's getting reports on. If it's me, I pick up that one first, just so you get an understanding of what exactly is going on in our universe.
I'm going to throw Keith on the spot here. What was your favorite of these books?
I actually read them all in one sitting, so it's kind of, I'm trying to separate them out.
Really? Because my favorite was The Medic, the one I read last. And I think it has the least zombie content of any of the books.
It does. It does have the least, yeah.
Which surprised me, because I'm a huge zombie fan. Although I was a little bit concerned when Keith suggested doing this episode, because I had stopped reading zombie comic books, which had to be a concern for you. Not that I personally stopped, but there's a glut of zombie comic books on the market.
Yes.
There's tons. I blame Walking the Dead, and the quality doesn't seem to be that high. The exception is your books. What I mean, when you're looking at The Rack of Fear, that just... You're judging off covers, you're in a comic book store, you're just staring blindly at Comixology. Other than the great art on the covers, there's not a lot to make you grab that particular book to have a look. That had to be a concern. I mean, there are so many zombie books. And I think you answered the question of why you went with Night of the Living Dead. But was the horror genre a concern as well?
It wasn't, and I'll tell you why. The books, yeah, I mean, first of all, and if I'm shoehorning this in, then forgive me, but I'm the sales guy, so I have to do stuff like this. If you notice, well, first of all, the covers. Like, for you mentioned the covers. For me, and I like to think that I'm not speaking from within the bubble when I say this, but when I go to the comic book, like, I'll go to Midtown and I see our books compared to the rest of the covers, and I think we're doing something that's A, different, but B, really, really, really good. So I love our covers, and I think people will pick them up. And secondly, when people do pick up the actual physical books, they're going to notice a substantial difference in quality of the book itself. These are for anybody who has any idea about paperweight and the creation of a comic book. These are 100-pound covers. These are 80-pound interiors with UV coating throughout. this is like top of the line sort of stuff. If Marvel were putting these out, I'm pretty sure they'd charge $8 a piece for them because of the printing quality. Now, that being said, back to your question. Sorry. The zombie thing and the horror genre thing didn't concern us because ultimately, sometimes a zombie isn't a zombie. And sometimes a zombie ends up evolving on this whole other track that we have no real conception of yet. So if I'm being vague, it's absolutely on purpose.
Cool.
I love the covers of the really beautiful, really striking. I do know about printing, so 100-pound and 80-pound is that's a substantial piece. I think Marvel's now printing on about toilet paper is like a 10, so maybe it's a 12.
14 tops, yeah. and it's $4 a book, and you know, $5 if it's an event, and I'm pretty sure they're moving to all $5 shortly. So, you know, that was the other piece. We're so lucky, and I can't say this enough, to have the backing that we do. We know that there are so many independent publishers out there that don't have the backing that we have. So we're lucky to have that, to be able to do little things like that that can set us apart.
To answer your question, Chris, I looked back here. Spring, actually, I think was my favorite out of the batch. The one at the beach.
Yeah, no, that was good. I just, personally, I thought the medic was the most unique one. A couple of them for me, because I actually went back and watched the movie before diving in to these books. Some of them are rehashing a little too much for me. But, I mean, you need to do that as well, because not everyone is as insane as I am to watch the 1966 movie before reading the comic book.
It's really gotten me to want to read I want to rewatch it, though.
Oh, one of my favorite movies of all time. So, I mean, it's just good.
And mine, too, actually. When I got there and started reading some of the content that we already had, there are little things that we do in the books that are a real callback to the film. For those people listening that are listening because they're Night of the Living Dead fans, a big part of what Romero did and what his genius was in doing this film on such a low budget was using the media as exposition. And we do that, if you'll notice, throughout all 10 of the books, use the media within the town as a way to forward the plot of the books and forward the stories that we're telling. One of the books just plain old takes place in a radio station, but beyond that, it's, you know, you'll see televisions in a bunch of the books reporting on what's going on, the Venus probe stuff. You know, those callbacks, you see people in Washington, D.C. on television talking about this virtual army of unidentified assassins, you know, which is a direct line from the movie, which is just so powerful when you have it in print, too. There's a lot of callbacks to the film that I think some the film buffs will really appreciate.
And you can read these without getting a headache from Barbara's constant shrieking.
Right, and she's not virtually catatonic throughout the whole book either.
It's kind of a nice
change. The only thing she does in the movie is scream and stare.
Oh, I can't tell you how many times I've popped Night of the Living Dead, the original. I love it, but I always pop in the remake halfway through just so I can watch the movie without Barbara's constant shrieking. She's right. Really loud and not a very good actress.
Oh, you're talking about the Savini remake from the 90s?
Yes.
Nice. Yeah, no, it's a good...
Oh, yeah, of course the Savini remake. Sorry, that should go without saying. Nobody should...
Right.
I haven't seen that in years. Here in Calgary, they did a cast reunion just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, did you not go with me to that?
Yeah, yeah. I didn't go to the screening. I did some interviews in the afternoon. I interviewed one of the stars in the afternoon, but I didn't go to the screening of it. Whatever was going on, I couldn't make it. I haven't seen it in years, in many, many years. I watched it on VHS the last time I watched it.
Yeah, if you're getting ready for The Flash next week, Tony Todd's in both of those.
That's a nice double bill.
Yeah. Now did Gemma find all the artists and writers for this? Or were there some surprises? Were there submissions? How did all these titles come about?
The titles came about within in-house. We have a bit of a bullpen that we have going right now in terms of writers and artists. We've got two in-house artists and two in-house writers. Which is kind of cool from what I understand. It's not something that's really done in publishing right now. But the rest of the artists and stuff were all found through submissions. Bill really likes to tell this story to anybody who will listen about it. It's when he was at Marvel, he hired Bendis and he hired Millar to come in and write books. And before he got there, the way things were before the bankruptcy, it was almost impossible for people who were writing or doing art independently and hadn't been at Marvel for years to get a job there. And Bill still feels the same way. We're taking open submissions at all times for every position. Writers, pencilers, colorists, inkers, across the layout artists, across the board. It's actually, I can give you the email address for anybody who's listening that's an aspiring artist to submit their stuff.
Yeah, go ahead. Spit that out.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. I just wanted to make sure that was cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's double take submissions, all one word, at taketwogames.com. Double take submissions at taketwogames.com, and it's the number two, so it's taketwogames.com.
Very cool. We are very popular with comic creators.
Awesome.
As I speak, they are creating comics while listening to us talk.
Yeah.
Which is one of the coolest things.
Making for awkward interviews later.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean we have a couple of really great new cover artists. I know the Dedication, which is the book that takes place at the grocery store in town. The cover artist on that, his name is Ruiz Burgos. He hasn't had any mainstream covers before, and it was by five or six different websites that do columns on best covers of the week. It was named cover of the week the week of the 16th when we came out, and for good reason. It's, you know, it's the Donna Reed style 50s housewife carrying a tray of random viscera.
Actually, my favorite book, as well as the favorite cover, was The Medic. And this slab also has a gorgeous cover. Actually, all the covers have something to recommend them.
Yeah, we're really, this goes back to Bill's sensibilities. For those who don't know, Bill Jemis, who's our GM, I keep saying Bill as if everyone knows who I'm talking about. You know, Bill. He ran Fleer from 93 to 97-ish. So he's got a trading card background. So his sensibilities go towards that one really defined image. And that's kind of where we land on our covers. We have office brainstorm sessions where we have like an idea session for different really striking covers that match the tone of the books. Our issue two covers are really great. I think our issue three covers are the best group of covers that we have so far. I'm really excited to hear what other people think.
And how far away? How far ahead are you worked now? Like, is the what issue with the artist you're working on?
We have covers up through all the way through four on all of them. We have some issue five covers. Right now, we're our artists are all working on finishing the issue twos and about halfway through the issue threes.
And I actually haven't seen these in print. I've only seen them digitally. How many pages are they in print?
Standard, 32 pages.
How many pages of, is that 20 or 22 pages of art?
I want to say 22. Some of them are actually more than 22. And I can't recall which ones off the top of my head, so forgive me.
That's all right.
There's 10 of them.
And these days, if it's over 20, that's quite an achievement. And it's an old school. I mean, because of the way your art's created, I imagine you would have more flexibility. It used to be, you know, way back in the day, you'd see the odd Marvel book that was, you know, 23 pages instead of 22, and then there'd be a note of no letters page this month because the story ran long. I can't remember the last time that happened. We decided that we just wanted more story this month.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Like, we have that luxury so far because, you know, as a fledgling publisher, we're relatively new, getting our feet underneath us and getting the amount of ads sold inside of a book that Marvel does is not an easy thing to do. But to be completely honest with you, it's not really even something that we've talked much about. We just want to get books in people's hands. More than anything else, we want readership, because I think once people start reading the books, then they're not going to stop. I'm partial, and I know that, and I like to believe that I maintain a level of impartiality when I'm talking about the books. But you know, I love almost every single one of them. There are a couple that I think really need a lot of work, but anybody that works a double take will say that out loud with no compunction about it. You know, we take our marching orders from Bill, and Bill would tell you right now, he'd say, yeah, you know, there are two or three books that, you know, are, you know, low B's, C's at best. So, you know, it's a work in process. We're constantly trying to make ourselves better and to be part of that creative process, even if it's just ancillary, because I just get to hear the stuff because we're in a small office while I'm selling books. It's a dream come true for a comic fan. It's so exciting.
Now, are you personally at all concerned? Because I actually thought these books read really well in the digital format with the digital animation, the motion comic stuff. Some of it, actually, I was quite concerned, would it translate to print? Like, if you're giving such a great reading experience digitally,
yeah,
why would I make the change, especially if it's going to cost me a buck and a half more? I understand the holding something in your hand. I just don't want to die in some sort of avalanche situation.
No, I get that. That makes sense to me.
Chris has always been afraid of this because a gypsy woman cursed him to die in a comic book avalanche. Never since.
I see. I mean, if there's a way to go, that would be the way, right? We talk about it a lot in the office, and we know that sometimes, because we do these books digitally first, right? So when we create and craft the books, we're creating and crafting them for digital. That's just the reality of it, and for the form that they're in. So we know that once we convert it over to print, no matter how many different ways we slice the gosh, what is wrong with me tonight? no matter how many different ways we slice the panels, sometimes it's going to be a little bit more clunky in print than it is going to be on digital. There's no doubt about it. That said, we feel like the stories, which are all true stories, by the way, and I'll get into that, the stories kind of carry themselves along and are immersive. Both the visual story of what's going on with whatever the hell is going on in Western Pennsylvania, but then also the first-person narrative stories that we have interspersed into the books.
And you were saying about how these were, you know, kind of phone-based. Do you think it actually reads better on a phone than it does on a tablet? Have you tried them out?
Yeah, I think so. I think it works better on a phone.
Interesting.
But you know what? It might be generational too. Mm-hmm. That I like it better on the phone because maybe a third of my day, that's what I'm doing anyway.
Right.
Right. I'm on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at the phone. I'm checking my email on the phone. I'm doing all those things. So why not incorporate that as well? But, you know, the books are created to read digitally. So I think they look better on a phone. Tablet works okay, too. But I think the bigger tablet you get, the more out of the story you kind of get, which just because it's a bit more, like, clunky and a little more stretched. I have an iPhone 6 Plus, and it's just about perfect. I love reading the books on my phone.
Now, has there been any talk about bonus features and like that? Because that's what we're talking. I just realized I really want the Medica cover as my wallpaper on my phone. I'm sure I could figure out a way to do it myself. Probably not all that legally, but have.
Well, as long as you're not charging for it, Chris, you're probably into fair use.
Yes. But has there been any talk of maybe releasing the print material without maybe the top graphic, without the double take logo?
Sure. And first of all, do me a favor. Please make Medic your background immediately.
Okay. I will work on that as soon as I hang up the phone.
However you need to do it, do it. But that's actually a great idea. We created some 11 by 17 inch prints of the first covers that, you know, are the same quality as the books themselves without the trade dress. And you're right, they're incredibly striking. They're very, like, wow, these are really high quality kind of pieces of art, really. And so while it's been bandied about, we haven't talked about that digital realm in terms of extras at this point, but I can guarantee you during my marketing meeting with Bill tomorrow, I'm going to be talking about it. So thank you. And now I look like a genius.
I was chatting with some comic guys and I had this idea.
Yep. Oh, no, you're never going to come up. Are you kidding me? I'm taking all the credit on this.
No, I'm doing an impression. I'm doing an impression of Gabe at the meeting tomorrow.
Oh. Now we've talked about the superhero universe a little bit. It's fairly clear that you guys have a plan. I'm just wondering how far this goes. Are you on a one-year plan? Do you have goals to meet 6 months down the line? Is it a five-year plan? How big is your quest for world domination going to grow? How far is the company looking?
Here's what I know. We're going to look at maintaining a stable of 20 titles. Once we get to 20 titles, we feel like that's a pretty good place to kind of cruise along and let them work themselves out and figure out exactly what's happening and cruise into the next year or so once we hit those 20 titles. We're hoping to hit 20 titles by June of next year. And once we do, we're going to keep cruising along, seeing what works and what doesn't. You know, there will be trade paperbacks of every six-issue arc. that will hopefully launch in the summer of next year, June, July, of these first 10. So all of that stuff is going to be planned. In terms of, you know, putting a five-year plan out there, no, we're not there yet. But we certainly know where the stories are going, how superheroes end up becoming a part of our universe, and how we incorporate, you know, this unifying event, the night of the Living Dead, into those stories down the road.
Now, this won't happen in a event, will it?
No. There will not be event books. There will not.
You scared me there, because I thought we were on the same page, and then all of a sudden I heard the word event, and it was like, oh no.
When I say unifying event, when I say unifying event, what I mean is what we're looking at right now. These first issues, this first six-issue arc of all these 10 titles is the unifying event for the universe, right? So in early January, February, when we launch the new titles, they'll be set in 2015 or 16, and in the same universe where back in 1966 all this craziness went down back in rural Pennsylvania, right? So that's what I mean by unifying event. There will be no event books. I mean, certainly not right now, and not for the foreseeable future. We hate the idea of the gimmickry, and to that extent, there will be no variants. We will not be doing any variant covers. The only thing we're doing to drive collectability, and I think it's the only thing that makes a ton of sense, is making one collectible book. So these first issues, all of our first issues in perpetuity, will never be reprinted.
Oh, interesting.
So I mean, what you're saying is they may be worth something someday.
That's the plan. And, you know, nowadays, being part of a company where there's lots and lots of media people bouncing about here and there, you know, you never know what could happen to a comic book.
I think, you know, fall 2017, they're launching 10 interconnected TV shows.
Please don't.
You're back.
I can't keep up with the ones that we have.
I luck out because I try about 10 new shows every fall, and so I spend about 10 hours going, I don't think I like network television. I'm back down to about 2 hours by the end of.
Nobody likes network television anymore.
So spoiled.
Just give me a Seinfeld reunion, or I'll be happy. I don't care.
I've tried a whole bunch of the new shows, and all the ones I'm hearing buzz from my pals, and I'm like, but by the third episode, this is just going to be a police procedural with a gimmick, right? It's just
Limitless did it in 2 episodes.
Yeah, almost everyone does it. Like by the second episode, you realize like there's no storyline here. It's just, you know, it's they're gonna solve a crime. There's gonna be a murder. They're gonna solve a crime. Minority Report did it like halfway through the first episode. They were into a procedural.
You know what I want to know? I want to know what happened to the mad, and maybe you guys can help me because you're a little bit, you guys are a couple years older than I am, so maybe you were looking at it through a different mm-hmm. lens than I was. When Heroes, the original Heroes came out, There was this magic about watching the show every week because it was so unique and so original, and nothing had ever been done like it on television, and I couldn't wait until the next episode. And then I watched Heroes Reborn. And I swear to God, I fell asleep 20 minutes into it.
I think everyone remembers Heroes, but what they actually remember is Heroes Season 1.
Yeah. Writers before they lost everybody.
Okay. Well, in the second season, I mean, they tried. They were bold. They tried something very new. They introduced a ton of new characters, and it was a train wreck. And later on, the creators said it was actually a really good thing for them that the writer's strike happened, because essentially they had to put the season down.
By the end of season two, I was done.
Yeah, and I think that I actually like season four quite a bit. So many people had left by that, like so many viewers had stopped watching by season four that not that many people even saw it entirely. I don't know. I haven't seen Reborn yet. I certainly am not seeing good buzz. I like season four of Heroes, so you know it might still be in my bag. It depends. I think it that newness is really really hard to recapture. The idea of the first time Heroes was on TV, like when if that first season, it was so new, it was so different than anything else that was on. And now, superheroes is no longer a fresh thing on TV. We've got like 10 hours mm-hmm. of superheroes a week. It's not a. There's no like, finally our time has come for comic geeks. Like, you know, we have no end of television that's for us.
Right.
So we don't have to compromise as much either. There's that. Like, you know, often Chris and I talk about the number of shows that we convinced ourselves to like and convinced because we felt we had to support them.
Yeah, it's not that case anymore. We have won.
Yeah.
Geeks rule the earth.
Yeah, like if a comic show was on 20 years ago, I would watch it no matter what because finally their comics are appearing on TV and I'll lay back and think of the queen. I'll do my part to keep them on TV. But now, I mean, you know, I don't want to watch a comic show. So what? Like, there's another one on in a half an hour. I've lost track of how many comic shows are on TV. There's going to be five more. There's going to be two on Netflix a year, at least.
Right.
There's something like eight movies next year based on comics. So yeah, there's no, you know, in 2006 when Heroes was first on, we didn't have this. We didn't have this kind of geek plenty. So yeah, I think we grabbed onto it because it was something that was for us. And that gives you rose-colored glasses sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's really spot on. I personally, the landscape isn't quite as broad for me because I never read a DC book outside of Superman, but that I liked. But even the Superman, I stopped reading after I was 12 because I never was able to get into the DC universe. So none of the stuff that's on CW appeals to me at all. I think that's why it's so depressing when I watch the other shows that are out there and it's like, oh my gosh, I can't. Daredevil, on the other hand, I feel like Daredevil, a person who's never read a comic book in their life can start watching that show and enjoy it.
I think that I would say I think Flash stands better for, stands alone better. I don't think Flash will age any better than Arrow's definitely not going to age any better than Smallville has. My wife kind of pops in every once in a while to watch some shows with me. Mostly she like plays on her phone while she's like half watching it, which is how I watch Game of Thrones. So I don't say anything. I watch Game of Thrones and just like, you know, and she'll pop out. Oh, there's a fight scene. What? Okay. I'll put my phone down for a second.
Oh, come on, Chris. Give it a shot.
If I have someone else there when Arrow's on, I'm aware that it's not a really super slick show. But I'm into the story, I'm into the characters. So that's right. The forgiveness part of it. Daredevil is just a slick show. It is part of that's probably it's got a little higher budget. It's got different production style.
Sure.
It's more compact. When you're filming a whole season in that way, like where you're gonna, if you have an advantage, you have a cost-effective advantage that you don't have on a weekly TV show. You can film everything in a location for the entire season at once. And essentially, I mean, that's the way Sense8 was filmed. It was like, that's how they afforded to do this, the show that was filmed in seven different countries, for a season, is that they filmed everything in a country at the same time.
Yeah, they don't have to worry about schedules or anything. They're putting it all out at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're not feeding the beast. I mean, weekly TV is feeding the beast, and the same that monthly comics is feeding the beast. Like, you that issue has to go out at the door. That episode has to be ready to be on the air. Netflix doesn't have that. Right. And they have secret scheduling, like, at times, but they're careful not to advertise them too far in advance. It was only a couple of weeks ago they finally put a date to Jessica Jones.
Which I can't wait for, because I love the Alias comic. That is going to be the series. I can't wait.
That would have been during Bill's time, wouldn't it?
It was just after. Just after Bill's time, yeah.
It was his leadership, though, that kept that ball. It was inspired by the actions he had done while he was.
Yeah, it's honestly the history there is muddy out in the real world, but hearing the stories about everything that was going down at Marvel at the time and being able to be at the table, so to speak, there's just so much stuff that people don't realize that he. In a very real way, and this is going to come off as ass-kissing and hero worship to a lot of people, but the truth of the matter is he ushered in the era that brought us to where we are now in terms of comics flourishing to a large degree. And when I say flourishing, I mean us having such a large variety of comics to choose from every week.
Now, I was avoiding this question because he's not here. Sure. Was Ultimate Spider-Man Bendis' first Marvel book?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Because I remember at the time I was reading Bendis' AKA Goldfish and Torso and absolutely loving it. And at the time, you didn't just make that jump to Marvel, especially with a Spider-Man number one. He certainly showed some foresight in hiring Bendis. That was a brave move.
It was an interesting thing. The story actually goes that the guy who was running Wizard, you guys remember Wizard magazine?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
The guy who was running Wizard at the time, his name was Garib Sheamus. He and Bill were very close friends, and they were at a Comic-Con together. And Garib and Bill, they were talking about Spider-Man. And Garib made a comment offhand, something along the lines of, you know, if they keep going with Spider-Man, eventually we're going to be reading Spider-Man comics about him collecting a 401k and a pension. And that's where the idea really came from, and Bill ran with it and pitched it and decided this is what we're going to do.
Has he ever said anything to you about what he thinks? Sorry, I retract the question. That's an unfair question to ask.
I want to hear what the question. I won't answer it, but I'd love to hear what the question is anyway.
I was going to ask what Bill thinks of where the Ultimate Universe ended up with the new Ultimate Spider-Man.
Like Miles, that thing?
Miles Morales, yeah.
I'll be completely honest with you. He probably doesn't have an opinion on it, and he probably hadn't read it.
Okay.
Just because he reads the stuff from his friends, the people that he likes. So he reads mm-hmm. Bendis and he reads Millar and that sort of stuff. But, you know, as busy as the guy is, he doesn't read everything. So I don't know that he is firmly aware of exactly what direction the universe took after he left.
All right, well, I think you need to get back to watching your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Damn it.
Netflix, the Netflix warning comes up every 10 minutes while you're watching the movie that says, are you still watching this?
What the hell is wrong with you?
It's really kind of snarky, though. It's, are you still watching
this? Oh.
Well, it gives me a chance to tell the joke I was going to tell earlier. You know what Michael Bay's business cards say, right?
What's that?
Michael Bay, explosions and nostalgia.
Oh, I do love explosions.
And I love nostalgia. See? There it is.
Guys,
this was an absolute pleasure. Like, seriously, thank you for having me on. And anytime you are stuck for a guest, please call me. I would love to talk comics for an
hour. Well, that sounds great. We'll look at if we can schedule time to get Bill on as well. And
absolutely, yeah. It would have to be. You know, he's an early bird, so he's up at like 4:30 a.m. every day. So he's in bed by the time that we got started. So. if we can, you know, we can schedule something. We can try to work something out for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Gabe, and good luck with number two. We'll be looking at all the different ways that we can look at these books. I'm going to now download them onto my phone and give them a try that way. I read them tablet. I'm going to explore the different experience. I'm going to set Honor as my wallpaper. That's my favorite cover.
The girl, the young lady who drew Honor also drew Medic.
Really, really striking images. Yep. Those two covers, especially those two covers. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you guys again. This was really great.
Excellent. Uh-huh. And you can follow us on Twitter. We Talk Podcasts. Like us on Facebook at We Talk Podcasts. Follow Chris at Chris_WeTalk. Follow me at Cub Reporter K. I'm the rebellious one that doesn't have a We Talk name. We're also on iTunes. Give a review if you have a chance. My fake name review from a couple of years ago is one of the only ones on there. It's always helps the show when you review us on the different sites. And you can also hear the show on comicosity.com. Anything you want to say to wrap up, Chris?
No, other than I am now surprised I can collect the entire universe of comics for about $20 a month. Or free if I go to or subscribe. I'm excited about this. When I started this podcast, I had no idea this was going to be a continuing line with superheroes and like that. I'm kind of jazzed about this whole thing.
Ground floor of a whole universe. I love it.
So yep. Are we. We're jazzed too. Do you guys mind if I give our
Twitter? Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah. How do I?
Right on. So please follow us at Double Take NYC, like New York City, at Double Take NYC. And then, of course, we're on Facebook, too, facebook.com/DoubleTakeComics, one word.
Excellent. And
you are followed.
Say again?
And you are followed.
Nice.
No, yeah, cool.
All right. Read some great comics, and what's the drop date for your number twos?
11/11, number twos and super packs should be in stores then. And if you want to read the digital versions of the books before the second issues drop or before you pick up the super pack, it's doubletakeuniverse.com or Comixology.
What do you have a date when they hit Comixology?
It'll be street date 11/11.
Nice. All right.
Cool.
And with that, we are OUT.